And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. I'm Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki, along with our Ag Director Bridget Riedel, at 106 in the afternoon on this 14th day of January. And man, does it feel like it out there. Temperatures still below zero across much of the area. We bottomed out this morning. It was coldest morning of the season so far, with temperatures between 15 and 25 below this morning. It was a cold one. Are you ready for warmer weather, Bridget?
Well, it'll get here eventually. Some will say it's brisk. Did I see something that it's going to settle in, though? Isn't there something called an Arctic dome that's coming? What term is that? What's going on there?
An Arctic dome. That's a new one. I don't think I've heard that before.
I swear I thought.
Where did you see it?
Who knows who's making this stuff up these days, but I thought an Arctic dome was a new term.
It sounds kind of cool. I like it. We're looking at, well, we're definitely looking at Arctic air coming into the area and actually staying in the area as well. For today, we're not going to rise a whole lot, only to about one above, but winds are going to turn to the south as we head throughout the day, about 5 to 10. Now, tonight, southerly winds will continue to increase, about 10 to 20. We'll drop down just below zero this evening and then see temperatures rise towards morning. And a windy day on tap for Wednesday. South-southwest winds 15 to 30 and gusty. So that will produce blowing snow on Wednesday, but we'll reach a high close to freezing. And quite a bit of cloud cover on Thursday with highs around 30. An Arctic front hits on Friday. We'll see windy conditions, a few snow showers with falling temperatures throughout the day. And that's going to set the stage for the coldest air of the season coming in here for the second half of the weekend and to start next week. Saturday, single-digit highs, and then Sunday, highs between 5 and 10 below, and bitterly cold, dangerous wind chills and breezy conditions both Sunday and Monday, with highs between, again, 5 and 10 below, morning lows about 20 below or colder. Wind chills are going to be anywhere between 35 and 40 5 below across the area for the latter half of the weekend and early next week. So prepare for that. It is going to be just dangerously cold as we head into the latter part of the weekend. Now, again, we'll see the few moderate days here over the next couple of days, but no big snows in the forecast. Keeping an eye on a clipper system, which could bring some minor accumulations, 22nd and 23rd, I believe the LRC had it on the calendar. And other than that, it's going to stay cold through the end of the month.
Well, like, it's January, right? We usually expect that there'll be a slight warm up coming in February. Not getting big snow totals in that time frame helps. It is certainly going to be bitterly cold, and we're going to want to keep an eye on that for the next few days, because children outside, you know, watch, make sure they're covered. You know, exposed skin freezes so quickly, especially on little ones at this point in time. I know that livestock producers are making sure that windbreaks are up, because when it is this cold and if you have any sort of a wind, it really is tough on the animals. You know, their body temperatures are hard to maintain when there's wind, and you can feel degrees dropping when you're in that cold and you don't have any protection from the wind coming at you. So we're going to just hope everybody makes it through the next few days warmling as best we possibly can. This is a time, if you can, do you start moving animals indoors too?
That was my next question, Bridget. Is there a threshold for livestock where it's, you know, that's it? They cannot be outside. Doesn't matter what.
Oh, I don't think there's ever a cannot be outside. And some, like any human, is going to be obstinate and say, but I want to go outside. And so, you know, farmers make it a good opportunity. First of all, windbreaks are up. You're going to heavily bed them. So you're going to put more straw out so that if animals need to lie down, that they don't get cold parts of their bodies. You know, we've talked about this with bulls. Same situation with cows, with udders. You don't want that on cold ground, because then you can get frostbite on that tender flesh. Oof. You're going to open up your barn doors, letting them go in as they want. You're going to make sure that waterers are open and you get plenty of fluids into that animal so that they can keep that internal combustion engine for heat running efficiently. And then also you're going to want to make sure that feed rations are correct and that you are able to give them extra so that, again, they're keeping that internal engine functioning. And we got a lot of mama cows out there that are pregnant and due to start calving end of February into March. And so that will be, you know, this is a time frame right now where we've got to keep those cows in good condition. Don't want their body scores dropping. But it's the same for sheep. Be the same for any other animal that's outside.
Sure. I mean, it's not, they say it's not fit for man or beast. And yeah, it's some, just taking a lit. What, if we had thicker snow cover, if we had a thicker snowpack, the cold would be enhanced even more so. So it's, we're lucky we've only got a few inches, most areas, a few inches of snow on the ground opposed to, you know, let's say six to 10 inches of fresh snow. And that makes a big difference too, is fresh snow really radiates out any heat and really exacerbates the cold. So at least we could be just trying to find the silver lining in what is going to be the coldest air of the season coming our way. Now, I did have an emailer on our sister station this morning ask about our January thaw. And if you follow along on the LRC calendar, it did have warmer weather coming in for this weekend through, I believe it was like Wednesday or Thursday of next week. That was a swing and a miss, and that'll happen occasionally with the LRC. It's not 100%. There's a couple other factors that came into play having to do with ridging, different ridging across the globe that wasn't there for the first couple of cycles, but it is here for this cycle. So that's the reason why we're not getting our quote-unquote January thaw. So apologies to those wanting warmer weather.
Well, let's face it, there's a real opportunity for us to see that in February when we start to see things warm up just a little bit. But for all of you ice anglers out there, yay!
Right.
Plenty of snow and plenty of ice, and we don't have snow cover to insulate that. But if you are fighting the cold weather, trying to keep critters getting water and so forth, it's not easy, and you have my sympathy. There is a reason why Duluth Trading Company makes some heavy outdoor gear, and it's for farmers, those who are working in construction and have other outside jobs. Stay warm. Don't forget your gloves. This is not the day for that to happen. I found it hilarious in Kansas City last week. Kids didn't go to school because there was a foot of snow on the ground. I mean, the streets were clear, but there was snow on the ground. And they're ill prepared for it. And a lot of kids don't even have winter gear to wear for that. So they didn't go to school.
That's surprising. I mean, they get snow down there. That's kind of surprising.
That was very surprising. And meanwhile, kids down there basically looked around. Or excuse me, kids up here basically could look around and say, oh, look. Let's make a snowman. Yay.
That's about it, right?
It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Yes. So all good things are happening there.
Yeah. How was the conference down in KC? How did that go?
Excellent. Excellent. It was, if you are wanting more business insight for your farm and operation, if you are looking to be inventive and creative in the things that you do, this is a good place to go. Plus, I really appreciated seeing outside perspectives come in when you have folks come from other industries and share what they've done and how that could translate to yours. I thought that was a really great methodology as well. And we want to make sure not to forget our whole weather update. This segment that we've been talking about comes to you from Equitable AgriFinance. And that is Ryan Bonesack. You can reach him at 701-261-6529. He has been providing long-term fixed rates for farmland financing, and he's here to help with local farms and ranchers. So make sure you give Ryan a call. Again, that's 701-261-6529. And we know that there's going to be some land changing hands over the next few weeks, next few months. So it might not be a bad thing to give Ryan a call and have a preliminary discussion with him while you can. You know, with this cold weather, one of the things you might crave is orange juice.
Ooh.
Maybe, maybe not. Well, we've had a past guest. He was a citrus agronomist. His name is Gene McAvoy, and he talked about a problem called citrus greening. It is a bacterial infection carried by a small pest in citrus in Florida. How bad is it? Right now, Florida's production, their groves, have been reduced by about 74%. Of the current groves still standing after Hurricane Milton came through, about 70% of that crop has been lost, a tremendous loss to the industry. The U.S. Department of Agriculture has reversed its decision earlier, saying that 2024 was going to see an expected production jump from last year, and that will no longer be the case. Scientists are working diligently to try to find a way to get rid of citrus greening. And it's everything from covering young trees. They haven't been able to find a pesticide that would work, doing gene editing in citrus trees. And also, it's interesting to note that they are trying to make sure and find a way to get that pest drawn to a host plant so that they can get rid of that pest as well. We'll see if it works.
Well, hey, we all love orange juice, so most
people do. Yes.
And we got a couple of callers before we hit break. We're going to go to Al real quick here. Al, welcome to Weather and Ag. What do you got for us today?
Well, just a quick question. With all the fires down there over there in California and all that there with all the smoke, when I'm in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico this weekend, is smoke going to get down that far?
Are you rubbing it in?
Bonnie wants some vanilla, so I got to go down to get it.
Oh, there you go. Well, I think you'll be okay, Al. I think you'll be okay. They might see a little bit of residual smoke, but not a whole lot. Not a whole lot.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Enjoy the warmer weather. Thanks for rubbing it in, Al.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. All right. All right. And we got Terry on line two. Terry, welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. What do you got for us today?
Hey, Dean. First of all, I love you guys' show. And I just wanted to say, Dean, that I was the one that had won the keychain for the 12-12-12.
Okay.
And I came down, when I came down to the front desk, that young gal was so cute. And she goes, have you ever met Dean? I said, no. And I said, I'm going to have to find a gym that he hangs out at so I can meet him. And I told her, I said, you know something? I said, I have been trying to get a keychain. I said, for you don't know how long. I mean, I have tried everything. And she goes, oh, my God. She goes, I'm so glad you got one. And I said, yeah. And I, you know, it was just hilarious.
Oh, that's great.
And I said, someday I'm going to meet Dean and Bridget, which would be even doubly the fun. So someday that will happen. But I do appreciate it. And that keychain is the bomb.
It's pretty cool, isn't it? No doubt. No doubt about it.
I got it hanging up on my wall.
Good deal. Good just deal.
Because, I ain't going to be wearing that thing. Oh, no.
Well, Terry, thank you so much for listening. We do appreciate it.
Oh, you betcha. Thank you, Dean.
Have a great one. Bye. Oh, our listeners are great, aren't they? Speaking about great, we've got a great guest coming up here this afternoon, Bridget.
We are going to visit with Mike Opperman. He is the executive director of the National Dairy Shrine. Did you know there was a dairy shrine?
I was just going to say, I didn't even know there was one.
So, yes, we're going to talk with Mike. I found this organization and I know nothing about it. So I'm really kind of excited to ask as a former dairy farmer's daughter. I'm just curious. Any of our cows make it in there? I guess we'll find out. We'll be back right after this. And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Hopefully y'all are staying a little bit warm. Instead of headphones today, you might need fuzzy earmuffs. I had a pair in high school that were big giant pandas on my head. I guess that was my first foray into Star Wars and my take on Princess Leia. But otherwise, keep in mind, we are also looking for more students as young assistant ag directors. So if you would care to join us on air for a day, I'll work with you to find a day that works out in your schedule when as a student, you're not in class. We would have you join us not only before the show to do some prep work, but during the show. We'll pick the day that works best for you. We'll talk about our topics. We'll interview guests. You'll get a behind-the-scenes look at doing radio. And I'm looking for students who are about freshman, sophomore in high school up to about that freshman, sophomore age at college. Would love to give you the work experience opportunity behind the scenes that we can offer here at WDAY. You know, and if you are considering what you're going to do for insurance, we want to make sure that you consider JLA Insurance. Nate Thorsrud is owner and a farmer on a family farm in Grandin. He has insurance roots in North Dakota fields. He's not only a farmer, but he's been doing insurance since 2004. family-founded crop and hail insurance agency. He will never try to sell you what you don't need. So give him a call at 701-371-0311. You never know, Dean. Maybe I'll use him as my assistant ag director for a day until we have.
There you go. I got
great student applications in.
What a great opportunity! You know, growing up, and I don't know if you know, I install it with my son, but my parents always installed this: that if you ever have an opportunity to do an internship, to shadow stuff like you were saying, Bridget, take advantage of it. There's so much you can learn. You'll learn more shadowing. Or working with professionals sometimes than you will in class because you get the hands-on experience. So yeah, it's a great opportunity for these younger kids.
You know, we'll get a chance to share some things that you just don't get in a textbook or anything like that. So we're definitely going to try to give you the behind the scenes experience as we are working to get our guest connected today. We're having a little technical difficulty in the background, but it's going to get us there. So we'll just keep making sure that you are up to speed on what's going on amongst the ag headlines. All right. So here's crop we don't talk about very often anyway. Camelina. I'm not sure if that's ever been something that's been on your radar, Dean. Maybe not. Yeah,
nope. I can't say it has.
All right. So camelina is a tiny oilseed crop that really has gotten an awful lot of attention as of late. It really thrives on marginal land. I have many farmers who are going to say that, but that's my whole place. And it does better with fewer inputs relative to other oil seeds, has a short life cycle. It really can come to fruition in 85 to 100 days. And the big reason people are interested in talking about camelina is sustainable aviation fuel. We are looking at having acres raised in western North Dakota, eastern Montana. That camelina seed could be crushed in Dickinson at the Marathon plant and then changed over into that aviation fuel. According to Yield 10 Biosciences annual report, camelina can yield 60 to 100 gallons of oil per acre. That's 100 billion gallons of feedstock oil that would therefore require 10 to 15 million acres of camelina. At this point, we don't have that many acres, but it's really an untapped market when it comes to genetic advances. And it also is very high in omega-3 oil content. So we'll see where things lead for us when it comes to camelina, but this is an area that seems a good growing point for us. So we now have another crop to talk about on the headlines, but we have our guest. And maybe what we should do is, because we're at the bottom of the hour, let's quick catch our news and then let's bring Mike on so we get a full amount of time with him. Again, that'll be Mike Opperman. He's the executive director of the National Dairy Shrine. We'll be right back. And welcome back to Weather and Ag in Focus. And we have our guest with us. We are joined by Mike Opperman. He's the executive director of the National Dairy Shrine. Hello, Mike. How are you today?
Hey, I'm great. How are you guys?
Good.
Thanks for being here, because as a former dairy farmer's daughter, I didn't know there was a National Dairy Shrine. What should I know?
Well, in 2024, National Dairy Shrine celebrated our 75th year, so our organization has been around for a while. But we're a nonprofit organization that is a national organization focused on our mission, which covers three pillars. And the first is to inspire youth. So we provide about 40 scholarships to college students who are in dairy programs across the country, totaling about just south of $50,000 a year for those scholarships. And we do a lot of other things to help young people in the dairy industry and in agriculture. Our second pillar is around recognizing dairy leaders. And each year we honor a guest of honor and a group of pioneers who have contributed significantly to the dairy industry. And we also recognize a distinguished dairy producer as well, who, as you can imagine, has done exemplary things on the farm. And then our third pillar is around preserving history. And I'm here in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin, and we actually have a museum here in Fort Atkinson that has artifacts about the dairy industry and really is for anyone to come and learn about the history of dairying and also gain a better understanding of how milk and all the great dairy products are made. So that's kind of the Dairy Shrine, I guess, in a nutshell.
Now, Mike, for anybody that is in your area that is interested in it, what would you say, or what kind of feedback have you gotten that, wow, like, this is one thing I just had no idea? What could people expect to learn?
I think, that, you know, we get two different areas. The first, and, you know, this segment of our audience really has grown, as you can imagine, as more people have left the farm. But we get a lot of consumers who actually come through our museum and who might follow us on social media and so forth, who really don't have an understanding of the dairy industry. And they just, you know, learn, you know, just the basics of what's a cow, where does milk come from, how do you make cheese, how do you make ice cream. You know, we have, you know, butter churns and cheese molds and ice cream makers and things like that in our museum. And we also have featured them online as well through our social media, through our Facebook page. So it's just helping consumers and folks who might be a generation or two away from the farm just to understand where other dairy products come from. And then our other audience is obviously folks who are in the dairy industry and really appreciate that there's an organization out there who is advocating on their behalf, but also preserving the history of the industry. Not only, you know, the artifacts and, you know, the cream separators and butter churns and so forth that are part of, you know, the history of dairy product manufacturing and so forth, but also preserving the history and the knowledge of the people who have come before us. So all of those trailblazers and trendsetters and industry folks who have done such great things in the industry, you know, we're a place where we preserve that knowledge and recognize those people. So it's really kind of a two-pronged response that we get from folks.
That's pretty cool.
You know, as I'm looking at the website, I see things like the Distinguished Dairy Cattle Breeder Award recipients. And this has been going on for 50 years, recognizing dairy farms from what looks like across the country who have been just leaders in the industry and providing quality animals and quality milk.
Yeah, we've you know, our organization was really founded to recognize those breeders and great dairy farmers who just have done an exemplary job of not only dairy farming, but also, you know, breeding great cattle. So it really started as, you know, those great dairy shows of the past where, you know, it used to be a big show in Waterloo, Iowa, the National Cattle Congress. And our organization was really started there. And it was to recognize those breeders who bred great cattle, who bred great bulls, who really impacted the genetics of the industry. And then, as you can imagine, over 75 years, our organization has evolved into a wider breadth of really the dairy industry in general. But we really, our foundation is really with those folks who are on the farm every day, milking cows and breeding great herds.
This is maybe going to sound a little bit late in the game to ask, but Mike, are you a dairy farmer too?
I used to be. I grew up on a dairy farm. I grew up on a dairy farm in Iowa, Western Iowa. I think, you know, there's not a lot of dairies left in Western Iowa anymore. Once I got into the real world, I still had that kind of hankering for dairy farming. So I actually managed my own dairy for about 5 years before going on to other things. But dairy farming certainly is in my blood. Yes, and I've been around the Dairy Shrine for all of my life. So being in the role as executive director for the last, I guess, 4.5 years has really kind of been a labor of love.
Oh, I'm sure it has. And, you know, June is Dairy Month all across the U.S. Mm-hmm. Is that your month that's the busiest for you, for the Shrine, for those around the country doing dairy promotion?
It is, yeah. And certainly in our museum, we have a dairy day where we actually have a cow parade where we block off the street next to the museum and we find a representative of each of the 7 dairy breeds. And we actually lead the cows and maybe a calf or two down the street so people can see, you know, the different flavors of dairy cows that are out there. And that's really well attended by our local community and others. And, you know, July is ice cream month, so we have an ice cream social around the 4th of July. And we do a lot of things in the museum and online to kind of promote dairy over the summer, especially in June and July.
So I heard you say, and I don't know that you meant it this way, the parade is led by cows, and I'm going to guess they're live cows. This is not a costume party, correct?
That's right. Yep, that's right. Yeah,
and then
go ahead.
No, finish your thought, because then I have another question.
Yeah, we coordinate it with local dairy farmers who have different breeds of cattle, and we they have a leads person that leads them, you know, down the street. And, it's just a great way for folks to see kind of the different breeds of dairy cattle and what each represents.
Well, earlier I heard you say a different flavor of the dairy, or for each different flavor of dairy cows. And I just want to reiterate, chocolate milk does not come from brown Swiss or anything like that. We only get white.
That's right. I grew up on a brown Swiss dairy, so I can reiterate that chocolate milk does not come from brown cows.
Thank you for correcting that little myth that's out there.
That's right.
You know, as you look at the dairy shrine, and like you said, so many dairy farmers have left the farm, but I think that as a farmer, the most emotional attachment you have to an animal is probably to a dairy cow. And do you see a lot of those farmers, even though they're no longer in the dairy business, they really want to still be active and part of the shrine and the things that you do?
Yeah, certainly. And I think that's one of the things that we kind of hit when we, as part of the museum, especially when folks may have moved off the farm, come to the museum, you know, they can see, get reacquainted with how they used to do things, you know, the milking machines, or, you know, the champion cow pictures that are up. I think they really start to relive kind of their youth and their experiences on the farm. And I think that's a really special time for folks to come back.
You know, as you think about the museum and the work that you do, like you said, you've pretty much been raised around it. What's your favorite exhibit?
Oh, gosh. Probably one of the things that was one of my favorites is we have captured a video from historical figures and leaders of the past, going back to, early 1970s, and just sometimes I'll just go and just pull up, you know, some video histories of folks, and just, you know, of names that I recognize from the past, famous people. And it's great just to sit and watch them on video and hear firsthand kind of their thoughts and how they did things and their experiences. So that's probably my favorite part of the museum, is that oral history that we've captured.
Well, I think just the history in general, because like you said, not everybody realizes what a labor-intensive process it was at one point in time to take milk, right, to make cream and butter and all of those items. I don't think I ever wanted to find myself on the dasher end of a butter churn, I'll tell you that much.
That's right. It certainly was a labor-intense process, that's for sure.
It really was. And, you know, when you think about dairy and historic connections to it, one of the things that comes to mind for me is actually Hord's Dairyman, which is a magazine that's published all about the dairy industry. Do you feature any things about Hord's Dairyman at the museum?
Quite a bit, actually. You know, the Hord's Dairyman headquarters is in Fort Atkinson, the same town as our museum. And the museum was started really from, you know, representatives at Hord's Dairyman who had that vision of creating a physical place where we could preserve some of the history. So, and, you know, Hord's Dairyman's been around since 1885. So they are really they represent the history of the dairy industry as well. So there's a lot from Hord's Dairyman that's in the museum. There's a large statue of W.D. Hord. It's right in the museum. So, and certainly a lot of the artifacts, old magazines and things like that that came from Hord's are present in the museum as well. So it's really a partnership between the National Dairy Shrine and Hord's Dairyman to keep the shrine going and active. So it's been a great relationship.
So I have two things to ask you, Mike. And one is, mm-hmm. are you currently looking for any specific exhibits for the museum? And secondly, I heard you mention just shy of $50,000 in scholarships for students. Can you talk about those scholarships and their criteria, when students could be applying, that type of thing?
Sure. So with regard to artifacts for the museum, we do accept items. We're pretty well stocked up right now, but if someone has, things that are unique or special to the dairy industry, they can certainly contact us through our website. With regard to the scholarships, our scholarship application process will start up March 1st, and it goes to April 15th. And there's about seven scholarships that students can apply for. Some of them are focused more on different, their position in school, whether they're a freshman, sophomore, junior, senior, et cetera. But the criteria is, we focus obviously on academics. We focus on those who have had leadership roles in their dairy science clubs or their 4-H groups or their FFA groups, things like that. And also those who have kind of been advocates for dairy, in their young careers. So, we get about 150 applications in every year, and we'll, award about 40 scholarships. So there is some overlap. I mean, there is some, it is a fairly competitive process, but certainly encourage anyone who wants to apply to do so. And again, all of that scholarship information can be found on our website at dairyshrine.org.
But I'm really excited to hear that students are still applying, because oftentimes we think that there's so much upheaval in the dairy industry and not a lot of students are looking to get into dairy science. But it gives me a lot of positivity for the future if you have students applying that heavily for your scholarship funds.
Yeah, and it's evolved over time where the number of kids that apply who come directly from dairy farms is, we don't get as many of those as we used to. But a lot of them are, might have family members who have dairy farms, or they're just interested in dairy. They were exposed to it through maybe the state fair or through the county fair or by going to a friend's farm or something like that and became interested. So, it's all about just being passionate for the dairy industry and applying.
That's awesome. And I had a thought come to mind. I have an idea for an exhibit for you, although it's just going to reflect badly on myself. Once upon a time, June, of course, is Dairy Month, and my mom was in charge of dairy promotion for our county. And somewhere in North Dakota, I think we had a dairy promotion board, they had a costume. It was a cow costume called Molly Moo.
Oh, no.
And guess who got to spend her 16th birthday dressed as Molly Moo, paraded all around town.
Oh,
yeah.
Please tell me you still have pictures.
Oh, I know where the pictures are. And
I
know that they're
that's
not
terrific.
They're not in electronic form. So.
Oh, we can scan them.
Scan them, right. We can scan them. We'll make an exhibit just for you.
That's perfect.
Yeah. I was just going to send you, if I could find that costume, I'd happily send it back to you, Mike.
Oh, that's terrific.
So, Mike Opperman, he is executive director of the National Dairy Shrine. Mike, any last thoughts for folks who are listening and might be making a trip to Wisconsin soon?
I just appreciate the time today. And certainly if you are in southern Wisconsin and would like to stop by the museum, just visit our website at dairyshrine.org, and there'll be contact information there for how you can visit. I will say that the museum is closed on Sundays and Mondays, so plan your trips accordingly. But otherwise, we'd love to have you.
I think it'd be a great stop. So thanks again for joining us today, Mike.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, don't go anywhere. One more check of that bitterly cold weather coming up with Dean, and we'll touch on some headlines, and we'll be back.
And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. I want to thank everybody for joining us today. Man, it's a cold one out there, that's for sure. We've got temperatures Checking in just below zero, two below here at the studio, five below in Moorhead. It's two below up in Grand Forks and three below in Wahpeton. Out to the west, already in the single digits out around Jamestown, but the southwestern part of the state is nice and I'll call it mild, upper 20s. I mean, that's a heck of a better shot than two below right now, that's for sure. And we do have warmer weather coming as we head into the next couple of days. We'll actually see temperatures bottom out below zero early this evening and then see temperatures rise overnight as south winds start to increase at about 10 to 20 and a windy day tomorrow out of the south southwest. 15 to 30 and gusty. That's going to produce blowing snow. Probably some more slick roadways, especially those east-west roadways, with highs around freezing. And then Thursday, still breezy, but not that bad, with highs, again, right around 30. And then Friday, another Arctic front slams through with some snow showers and falling temperatures and a bitterly cold weekend. This would be a good weekend to just sit inside and watch some playoff football. Three above Saturday, seven below, with breezy conditions on Sunday. We'll more than likely have, I still call it wind chill warnings, cold weather warnings, I'm sure, will be issued for this weekend with wind chills in parts of the area approaching 40 below this weekend. So that's just darn dangerously cold wind chills as we head into the upcoming weekend. So be ready for it. It will moderate a little bit by the middle of next week as our LRC has a clipper system coming through here, which will could deposit a little bit of light snow towards Wednesday of next week. Not looking at a big system. And then we're keeping an eye on a potential system that first few days in February. We'll be keeping a close eye on that as well. That there's signs there could be a pretty decent-sized system, and the LRC has it on the calendar as well. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. If you're a snow lover, that would be our chance. And as we were saying yesterday, Bridget, you know, I mean, we got some snow in some areas, especially in Lakes Country, enough to go snowmobile and enough for our sledders. But I'll tell you, if you really want a lot of snowpack with all this Arctic air spilling in from Canada, the UP of Michigan, they are just going to continually get hit with snow. So some great lake effect snow in Michigan. If you want to take a road trip, that's the place to go for some nice fresh powder. It looks really, really wintry up there.
Well, and some will want to, as well as a lot of folks generally go out to West Yellowstone and other areas that mm-hmm. they want to get some snowmobiling in. Now, before you head off on your little vacations, don't forget many farmers are off buying inputs right now for the new year. They're looking ahead to ag chem and fertilizer pricing. Now, when it comes to purchasing some of your herbicides, et cetera, please make sure that if you change brand names, maybe you're moving away from a specific brand name to another, make sure that you are looking at the active ingredients, that they are comparable, that there's not something that you were not expecting or that you may have missed because you changed brand names. And then additionally, check the concentration levels. The active ingredients per pound does matter. You don't want to either overapply and cause potential crop damage or underapply and thus start building a case for weed resistance. So double checking those can really make a difference. You know, we also have some new products on the market this year, like there's a new glufosinate that's a higher concentration. That's going to change your application volumes when it comes time to head to the field. You want to make sure those adjustments are taken care of in your records, as well as for whoever's your operator, whether it's you or someone else. So keep an eye on those labels as you're getting ready to purchase products for next year.
Good idea. Good idea. Well, we want to thank everybody for joining us this afternoon on Weather and Ag in Focus. For Bridget, myself, have a great rest of your afternoon. Stay warm. Don't go anywhere. Jay Thomas Show is coming up next.